Lewis did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across West Midlands as you listen. This is their story. In one of the worst off constituencies in England, transport infrastructure projects remain unbuilt while qualified engineers sit idle and training centres stand locked. The government that issues the pound sterling told Lewis there was no money to connect the skills that exist with the projects the region desperately needs.
I'm Lewis, 28, and I've lived in the same terraced house in Tipton my whole life. It's where my nan raised me after my parents died in a car crash when I was 7. She always said I had good hands for building things, and she was right. I could fix anything in that house before I was 10. When I left school at 16, I went straight to work with my uncle's demolition crew, hard graft, but honest work. And every day, driving past the massive construction projects around Birmingham, I think about what it would be like to build something that would last 100 years instead of tearing things down. When the 2008 crash hit, construction work dried up overnight. Half the lads on our crew were laid off. I got my HGV licence and spent 5 years driving lorries while studying civil engineering part-time at Wolverhampton University. Long days, longer nights with the textbooks, but I had a plan. I wanted to work on the big transport projects. Motorways, railways, bridges, infrastructure that would connect places like Tipton to the rest of the country properly. I qualified in 2019 and I was ready. The first place I applied was Network Rail's graduate scheme. I had done my research, knew they were expanding, knew there was talk of major investment coming. When I rang their recruitment line, the woman was polite but firm. "I'm sorry, Mr. Lewis, but there are no positions available in the West Midlands region at this time. All our current openings are concentrated in London and the South East. I asked when positions might open up here. "That would depend on future investment decisions," she said. "You're welcome to apply for our London-based roles." I told her I couldn't afford to move to London on a graduate salary. She understood, she said, but there was nothing she could do. Next, I tried Balfour Beatty. HS2 was supposed to be the biggest rail project in decades, and they were one of the main contractors. When I called about construction roles, the recruitment manager sounded tired. "The project has been scaled back due to Treasury spending reviews," he explained. "We've had to reduce our workforce rather than expand it. The uncertainty around future funding means we can't commit to new hires." "But HS2 was still happening," I said. I'd seen the work sites. "Yes," he replied, "but at a much reduced scale. The Treasury has insisted on phased delivery to control costs. Phase one is proceeding, but everything else is under review." I thought maybe the government directly would have opportunities. I went to the Department for Transport's regional office in Birmingham. The civil servant I spoke to was sympathetic but clear. "Infrastructure investment is under review pending budget allocations from Westminster. We simply don't have the funding confirmed for major regional projects at this time." "But the West Midlands needs better transport links," I said. "Everyone knows that." "Need and funding are different things," she replied. "We have to work within the constraints set by the Treasury." I tried Amy next, thinking maybe maintenance work would be more stable than new construction. They maintain local roads for councils across the Midlands. The project manager I met was blunt. "Our contract with Sandwell Council has been cut by 30% due to reduced government funding. We're letting people go, not taking them on." When I asked about other councils, he shook his head. "It's the same story everywhere. Central government funding to local authorities has been slashed. They're cutting road maintenance, not expanding it." "There is no funding," he said, and I could see he genuinely felt bad about it. "The budget has been cut across the board." At first, I accepted this. It sounded reasonable. Times were hard, money was tight, governments had to make difficult choices. Everyone was saying the same thing. There was no money. Then one Saturday, I was walking through Smethwick and I passed the old British Rail training centre. I'd heard about it but never seen it close up. It was massive, purpose-built for training people exactly like me. Heavy machinery training rigs, railway signal simulators, workshops full of equipment. All of it sitting behind locked gates. A security guard was doing his rounds and I asked him about it. Used to be buzzing, this place, he told me. Hundreds of lads learning their trade every year. Now look at it. He gestured at the empty classrooms visible through the windows. They've had to lay off half their instructors because there's no money for new courses. The equipment's all still there, good as new. The workshops are heated and ready to go. But the courses, cancelled. I stared through those gates at millions of pounds worth of training equipment sitting idle. Behind me, I could see the housing estates where dozens of lads like me were living on benefits, wanting to learn these exact skills. The instructors existed, the facilities existed, the students existed. What exactly was it that there was no money for? I started asking different questions. At the engineering meetup in Wolverhampton, I met Jake, who'd worked on government spending analysis. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins, he said, told you it couldn't find enough of them to train people who were standing right there, ready to work. Think about that. I did think about it. I thought about all those conversations where someone had used the phrase, there is no money, as though it ended the discussion. But I'd seen the training centre. I'd seen the empty buildings that used to house transport planning departments. I'd met the qualified instructors who'd been laid off, the engineers who couldn't get work, the projects that existed on paper but were never funded. The government that issues the pound chose not to spend the pounds that would connect these people to this work. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a political decision dressed as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here in Tipton, still watching, still learning, and I know now that what happened to me is happening in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Lewis experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A false analogy draws comparisons between things that seem similar but work in fundamentally different ways. You might compare a goldfish bowl to the ocean because both contain water, but one is a closed system with fixed resources while the other connects to vast renewable cycles. The comparison misleads because it ignores the crucial difference. Every time someone told Lewis there is no money, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. A household must earn or borrow pounds before it can spend them. The UK government issues pounds. It does not need to find them before it spends them. When the Treasury says it cannot afford to fund transport training, it is making the same logical error as comparing that goldfish bowl to the ocean. The proof was visible through the locked gates of that training centre. Instructors ready to teach, students ready to learn, equipment ready to use. The government chose not to create the pounds that would bring them together. That choice was presented as a financial impossibility. But it was a political decision. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Tipton and Wensbury ranks 36 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile. 1. The constituency has 1,254 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register. Total grants received were £19.8 million according to 360 Giving Grant Navas. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics and produced by Blocked Britain. Oct.